And welcome back to today's Topical Currents. It's a special pledge edition of Food and Dining. Bonnie Berman with you. Again, our pledge number to support local programming is 1-866.
I call it regional.
Regional programming. Okay, regional. Well, you're right. Regional programming and food and dining is 1-866-247-9576. That's 1-866-247-9576. And Bonnie Berman with you. Joining us now is chef, author, syndicated columnist, and chocoholic, Linda Gassenheimer.
How can you say that? Where did you get that from?
I got that from years of listening to you.
I see.
Okay, also with us is wine columnist and food enthusiast, Fred Tasker.
Absolutely, food enthusiast. I like that.
You like that?
Yeah, and last, very true.
And last but not least, the voice that you just heard, our resident pork...
Gee, I'm last on this program.
Yes, you are,
now?
Because whoa. I wanted to make you our resident pork lover, and particularly bacon, Joseph Cooper.
Oh, yeah.
Now, don't forget gravy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, gravy and butter.
Bonnie once said, my tombstone is going to read... oink, followed by, I don't want to talk about it.
Isn't that good?
Absolutely, Bonnie.
Okay, well, I thought we'd start out the show today, actually, Joe, with you telling us about your process and your thinking when you came up with the idea for food and dining almost 15 years ago.
Well, actually, it was a joint process. Linda and I went to lunch at, what was the Perricone's
place? Yes, we did.
Over on Brickell, and we discussed it, and she really didn't have much radio experience except just doing spots, but as far as producing. And the first couple of programs we did, if I remember, we recorded them because we were a little bit shaky with the phone calls and that. Remember, one of the early programs was with the late Mr. Food, who passed away a few months ago.
Yes, yes, yeah, we did.
The guy, it's so good.
It's so good. You know, it was wonderful. And you know, Joe and Bonnie, people say time flies when you're having fun. And it's certainly true. It's hard to believe that we've been on air together starting January, 15 years.
It's a long time.
It's great fun, but I'm looking forward to much more.
And right now, all of us, at least in the studio here in Miami, have a plate of spaghetti and meatballs in front of us. So when we go out and people say, do you really eat that food? Well, here's the answer.
We're gobbling it up. But, you know, it's fascinating to produce and host programs. And I just love, I've met so many interesting people in doing that. But, you know, it's the backstories that are really interesting. It tells us a lot about the people. I don't know if, do you remember when we had Danny DeVito on?
Oh, yes.
And it was just after his limoncello story. You may not remember that.
Where he went on TV a little overserved.
A little overserved on The View. And he told us that he had been out to dinner the night before with George Clooney. They both had the same agent. And they drank, he said, a little bit of limoncello liqueur. Well, it must have been more than that because he went back to the hotel, talked to his wife in California to the wee hours, didn't get any sleep, went on morning television, fell asleep in the limo on the way, and the rest was sort of history. But guess what? He now has a limoncello label.
Yeah, didn't that label start about 2 weeks after that incident? I always thought that was some kind of setup.
Oh, maybe. Could have been.
And wait, when did Fred come into the picture?
From day one.
Fred's always been in the picture.
Oh, okay. That's what I thought.
Fred has written the wine suggestions for my Dinner in Minutes column way before we were even on radio. So we've worked a long time together.
Yeah.
And we still like each other. Right, Fred?
Well, some people call us the Bickersons, but I think we get along pretty well.
You only need to say yes, right, Linda?
Oh, yes, right, Linda.
Linda,
she
a lot of
must
people
be obeyed, you know.
A lot of people and listeners might think, well, it shouldn't be too hard to produce food and dining programs. Then you could think up a few ideas, one, two, three, or four ideas. But let's take 15 years times 50.
52.
Well, 52, because now and then we're off, but wow, that's a lot of programming.
Yes, it certainly
is.
Yeah,
how do you decide each week on your content, Linda?
Well, there's just so many interesting people and so many interesting things to talk about and do, and everything's always new. And I happen to love what I'm doing, so there's always something to talk about. Do you remember when Emeril Lagasse was here?
Do I?
He was here a few times, and you know, we recorded him. And
one time he flew in seafood from New Orleans for us.
That's right. That's right. That's why we love him. But anyway, I was surprised he was here, and we kept him a little longer because we recorded two programs. We only thought we'd do one. And his PR person said, oh, we're late. We have to leave. And when he opened the door to leave the studio, there was a lineup of everybody in the building who wanted to sign the books. And his PR person said, oh, you don't have time. And he said, I do have time. These people waited for me, and I'm going to sign their books. And I thought that was really, really a nice thing great. To do.
Well, you know, I have to brag on Linda a little bit. She, one of the reasons this show works is that she knows everybody in the world of food. Bring up Jacques Pepin. They were neighbors in Connecticut, and they raised their children together. Mm-hmm. Julia Child, Linda worked in her eccentric kitchen in the south of France. She can get Martha Stewart on the phone. I mean, that's a skill.
She can get anybody.
Elton Brown.
Right.
Elton Brown.
Well,
yeah.
Thank you very much. Now I have to be nice to you, Fred. Thank you.
Yep. You got to cross out all that stuff you were going to say now.
Right. Well, you know, when we had Martha Stewart on just recently, Valentine's Day, I was so surprised because she said to me, she said on air, well, I don't have a Valentine and I would like to have one. And then shortly after that on the Today Show, they went online looking for a Valentine for her.
Oh, so we broke that story then.
We certainly
did. We scooped it.
Yeah,
I volunteered, but she turned me down.
There's no comment there.
Exactly.
Well, Joe, talk about turning you down, whatever. Do you remember Rachel Ray was here?
Do I? Two or three times.
You mean speaking of turning Joe down?
And yeah. And she was as prettier than on in person than on air, and just the nice and sweet and totally unaffected by her fame.
Well, yeah, she hung around for a good hour after the show signing autographs, and a lot of them were for kids because she had a new cookbook out that was called Cooking Rocks, and I was about to humiliate myself by asking her, why would you want to cook a rock, when I realized that she means it was a kid's book and that cooking is very cool, so it rocks.
Oh, cooking.
Hello, Fred. What I thought was funny was all of a sudden the studio was filled with several men. And I looked at Joe, and, well, Joe had invited everybody to come in and meet her.
In fact, we used the big studio for that.
Yes, recording. We did. But here's another story about Rachel Ray, which just I find so amazing, another backstory. I had written a print article from her, and we needed to copy check. So we called her, and she didn't call back. And then one Sunday morning, I get this phone call early. Excuse me. And it's Rachel. It's, hello, Linda. I said, Rachel, what's the matter? You sound exhausted. She says, oh, well, she said, I've just been celebrating all night. I'm in Italy. I've been celebrating my wedding. I said, you called me the morning after your wedding? And she said, well, you needed the information, so here it is.
Boy.
She's devoted.
Yeah. So
she's just a nice lady. I really like her.
Yeah. And another time I called her, I wanted something for Thanksgiving article, and she had just again landed in Italy, and she said, hurry up, Linda, I'm in Italy. But I asked her the question, and off the top of her head, she gave me the whole Thanksgiving leftover meal in 2 seconds, which I thought was really, really interesting.
So I have another question for Joe.
Mm-mm.
Does food and dining, is the picture of what you envisioned 15 years ago what it's become?
Pretty much. It's evolved like everything else. After you've done this a few years and feel comfortable with it. And I know Linda's always top pro. Her people are always here. I never have to worry about, oh gosh, where's Linda? She's here half an hour early. She's all set up. And we've been with her at some of her cooking demonstrations, like at the arts festivals and that.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like a machine. She's got that,
oh, thank
that cooler.
You. A machine.
And everything is prepped and boom, 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 boom. There's no messing around with her.
But you know, but make... Linda, we've had a few close calls when we got right down to the last second and the guest was just finally coming into the parking lot, too.
Yeah, that's...
Sometimes we have to fill a little bit or vamp.
Which is tough on a live show.
Right. Well, we're going to take just a short break here. I'm Linda Gassenheimer, and we're talking with Bonnie Berman and Joe Cooper and Fred Tasker.
And we're going to talk about Pledge supporting regional programming.
Right.
And regional programming is so important. So we would like everyone's support.
And welcome back to today's Topical
we
Currents.
We want to thank all those callers.
We do. We want to thank all of you who have made your pledge. And we want to encourage those of you who haven't to call us at 866-247-9576. That's 1-866-247-9576 to support Topical Currents, Food and Dining, Linda Gassenheimer, Fred Tasker, Joseph Cooper, and Bonnie Berman with you. And we're hoping you're continuing to make your pledges.
Indeed. We have a lot of fun doing this program, but it's also a lot of work.
It's a lot of work.
There's a lot of heart goes into this program from our staff, from Richard and from Caroline and you and
Paul Leary,
Leary
who does the website.
It's not really that many people when you compare it to the credits, say, on Fresh Air or Diane Rehm. It's like, gosh, would I like to have a staff like that?
Wow. Right.
You know, the nice thing about it, though, is that it's fun. It's always a good time when you do it. Mm-hmm.
That's true. And speaking of Fred, well, that was the voice of Fred Tasker, of course. Why don't we listen to a little something about wine?
Works for me.
A bottle of wine, a fruit of the vine. When you gonna let me get sober? Let me alone, let me go home. Let me go back and start singing with us. A bottle of wine, a fruit of the vine. When you gonna let me get sober?
Are you singing, Fred?
We're dancing
singing. That's
here.
That's my theme song.
Rambling around in the dirty old town, singing for nickels and dimes. Time's getting tough, I ain't got enough to buy a little bottle of wine. Bottle of wine, fruit of the vine. When you gonna let me get sober? Let me alone, let me go home. Let me go back and start over. Bottle of wine, fruit of the vine. When you gonna let me get sober?
Is that Fred doing the harmony?
I have a question for you, Fred. We kid a lot about your love of champagne, but I'd like to know seriously if there's any food you've come up with that doesn't go with champagne.
Oh, wow, that's a toughie. I suppose that if you were making a roast haunch of bear or something,
champagne
might kind of get blown out of the water.
Maybe you'd need the bubbles to take care of that bear.
Yeah, you need them there too.
Or have the courage to go shoot the bear, I guess.
Let me go back and start over.
Okay.
I was struggling through to make the latest guru. I was the 200th person in line. I turned to a friend, it's all the same in the end. Why don't we get a little bottle of wine? A bottle of wine, a fruit of the vine. When you gonna let me get sober? Let me alone, let me go home. Let me go back and start over.
And of course that was Bottle of Wine, a famous song by Tom Paxton, performed with other folk musicians.
You know, Fred once told me about his days in Italy when he was drinking that cheap jug wine. I guess that song would have been apropos for those times, Fred.
You know, wine is always wonderful, but it's always, as your mother says, everything in moderation.
And we want to thank Michael Stock, by the way, for providing all these musical interludes for us.
But you know, talking about music, do you remember we had Trisha Yearwood on? She's the country singer. And a Grammy Award winner, but she's also a big cook and a chef. But what I thought was really funny when she's told us about her husband, Garth Brooks, and his breakfast bowl. Now, here's what went into his breakfast bowl. Eggs, frozen tater tots, sausage, bacon, packaged cheddar cheese, packaged cheese, and garlic tortellini.
See, now champagne would go great with that.
So I guess that gave him enough energy to get through the day.
See that?
Well, I wanted to ask Bonnie and Joe a little bit about their background. Because, Joe, you've been in the radio business for, we won't say how many years.
Tell you mean after I got out of the Juvenile Delinquency Center? Or?
Well, that was your comment. But how did you get into the radio business?
I was 17 years old. I started working at an underground station in St. Louis. And I would take the bus down there at night. It was called KDNA. And they were the founders of WDNA, originally the Bascom Foundation. And then I went to the University of Missouri. I majored in photography and journalism, switched to broadcast, and did a little television work. But I always preferred radio.
So have you always been here in radio in Florida?
Well, I worked some in Missouri and also commercial station. I worked in an automated Drake Chenault format commercial station. Mm-hmm. So I was able to do a little bit of top 40 talking, 647 on KFMZ.
Oh, you got the voice.
Yes.
So, and you know a little bit about the history of LRN and how we want people to continue to support LRN.
Of course I do. It's been quite a tremendous growth from what we started with up at the old Lindsay Hopkins building with a little 8-pot mono board and we were like 10,000 watts, and then we went stereo 100,000 watts. We didn't even have satellite, NPR satellite then. It was by telephone lines that we got All Things Considered. And then later, Morning Edition didn't come across until about 1977. So for a long time, we had a major radio network that didn't have a morning program. When today, it just sounds so ridiculous.
Oh, yeah.
It does. And what, Bonnie.
Yes.
So, go ahead. You have a question first?
What year did Morning Edition start?
I think about 77.
And the first host?
Of Morning Bob Edwards. It was a big boondoggle. They had hired a couple of commercial people to do that show, and they played it for the stations as an audition, and they absolutely hated it. So they took Bob Edwards off of co-hosting All Things Considered with Susan Stamberg and made him the lone host of Morning Edition. And of course,
which he was for years.
For the 25, 30 years.
Right. And Bonnie, you've been in the business a while. Tell us about it.
Well, I started actually by reading to the blind, if you can believe. I mean, I always thought about radio because I was a classical music lover and played piano, and so listened to the classical station a lot and thought about radio. But I started by reading to the blind. A friend of mine went blind, and so I started doing...
And that was here?
That was here.
Right.
You read the New Yorker, if I remember.
I read the New Yorker to him every week. And from there, I started doing stuff with Joe, actually. We did a Shelter from the...
Shelter from the Night. It was a...
Documentary.
A documentary about Camilla's house. Back in those days, I worked in high quality and not quantity like I do now. These things would take a month to edit.
Well, it was reel to reel, wasn't it?
And I had to go out I lived on the streets for a few days and had a special stereo recording set up. And I even had the tape machine going. I was hoping this was the low point of my career. In the men's showers at Camilla's house, I was recording.
That's right.
Goodness, wow.
And so that, and then Joe had me do some spots, and then TV heard them, and then TV hired me to do their spots. And then one thing led to another, and I also worked, of course, at WTMI
for quite a long time.
And then the AM station, too. Mm-hmm.
I worked at the AM station, the AM classical station, after WTMI.
And you've been with us for a while here as a co-host, but for a while you were doing all the engineering for the show.
Yes,
and all
I
the
did
spots
that.
That you heard.
And all the spots.
Yeah,
right.
I've done a lot of different things here. Right. I actually did Morning Edition for a while.
Mm-hmm. And Fred Tasker, you were the wine columnist for the Miami Herald, retired, but still writing about wine columns, about wine for a column, syndicated column. But you weren't originally a wine columnist, is that right?
Well, I came to the Herald in 1969, and I was, for 42 years, I was a general assignment reporter and a medical writer and a science writer and all that sort of thing. Oh. But I had actually started drinking wine, I guess. I was drinking that cheap Lambrusco that Joe was talking about when I was in college in Italy. You could get a liter of it for 48 cents, and that's about how much we had as students. Then in 1991, the Herald asked me to start, our wine columnist left, and the Herald asked me to start writing about wine, and I've been doing it ever since. And it appears in the Herald and like 30, 40 newspapers around the country now.
But Fred, how did you learn about wine from being a science columnist?
Well, that was my hobby. There was a group called Les Amis du Vin, which was run by Chip Cassidy, the legendary South Florida wine man. And he would bring in guests about once a month, and we would go out and taste wine and listen to a lecture about the wine. And then once I started doing the column, the best way that you learn about wine is that a couple times a week, a California or Italy or French winemaker will come to Miami to hold tastings for the shops that sell his wine, and they usually invite the media. So that's a chance to sit there and sip the wine and taste it and interview the guy who made it at the same time. So that's better than any college classroom.
Well, it's
time to ring the cash register a little bit.
Right. Okay. I'm Linda Gassenheimer. I'm talking with Bonnie Berman and Joe Cooper and Fred Tasker about our memories here. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be back with more.
And welcome back to a special pledge edition of Food and Dining on Topical Currents. Thank you, everybody who has made your pledge. We appreciate it.
We really do.
And again, we'll just give that number in case you almost got it, but didn't quite
maybe
get it
written
down.
Maybe they didn't hear it enough.
Right. 1-866-247-9576. You can also pledge online at WLRNradio.org. Of course, I'm Bonnie Berman with Joseph Cooper, Linda Gassenheimer, and Fred Tasker on this special pledge edition. Linda, what do we always do now?
Well, what do we do? We eat, of course.
And?
Dinner in minutes. Yeah. All right. Well, thinking of, we talked earlier about Danny DeVito, and he was talking about his meatballs, and he thought his meatballs were better than mine. Well, I've made you today meatballs and spaghetti, which we are eating
right now.
I'm sorry you're not here in the studio with us, Fred.
Well, I'm sipping a little glass of Lambrusco, so I'm okay.
I feel like I'm on the Italian hill in my hometown of St. Louis.
Well, these are very light, fluffy ones. And the reason they're light and fluffy is because it soaks. I'm sorry I'm eating while we're talking.
I am too.
You take bread, some white bread, and you soak the bread in water, and then you squeeze it dry. And then you have some sirloin, chopped sirloin here, and a little garlic, sage, onion, some raisins. Combine that all together, either in the food processor, or I like to do it by hand because it keeps them light and fluffy. It doesn't get too much work on it. Add a little egg, mix it all together, a little salt and pepper, and then I saute them in a skillet.
First, how finely do you grate them?
Grate the...
You talk about putting the food in the meat in the food processor?
Oh, yeah. Just chop it a little bit just to combine everything because the meat's already ground. The bread just falls apart once you've done that. And the other things are already chopped and ready to go. So don't overprocess. Saute them for about 10 minutes in a skillet. And then just make sure they're brown on every side. Add some pasta sauce to the skillet and let that cook for a little bit. And then they're done. You serve it over cooked and drained spaghetti.
And you served with the mostaccioli, right?
I served it with what?
Mostaccioli. Isn't that the pasta we're having, or is it penne?
It's penne pasta. I call it meatballs and spaghetti, but I for the studio,
right,
we didn't want to be
slurping up spaghetti.
Exactly, slurping all over the place. I used a shortcut pasta, which you can do as well, so that's very easy. That whole recipe is at dinnerinminutes.com, and please follow me on Twitter. That's at L. Gassenheimer.
And Linda, I think just in deference to you, I said you were a chocoholic when we started out this show.
Mm-hmm.
But the truth is that all desserts, you're an all dessert kind of lady.
Yes, I'm not really a chocoholic.
Okay, just desserts.
It just has to taste good.
Just a dessertaholic.
Okay, dessertaholic.
Okay.
Why don't we listen to a little of this musical interlude by Robin Harper called Fudge.
Take a little butter, a third of a cup. You dump it in a bowl and then you cover it up with 3 cups of chocolate chips and use the good kind.
Oh, you tell 'em, Mama.
Top it with a can of sweet thick milk. You nuke it in the microwave until it's like silk. Well, come on in and take your shoes off. I'll make you some fudge.
Sounds better than sex.
Oh, boy.
So these musical interludes are from compiled from folk composer, musician Christine Lavin.
She's excellent.
Yeah. And, of course, provided by Michael Stock. And that was for you, Linda.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you. You know, she's talking about butter. And you remember Julia Child used to say, you can eat butter. There's nothing wrong with eating butter and all of that. And, of course, she lived till she was 90-something years old. But, you know, we interviewed her several times. And as Fred mentioned, I stayed in her home in the south of France. She was really a brilliant person. She was went to Smith College from Santa Barbara, California. So that was a long trip for us in that period of time. And I remember she was here in Miami one time, and I took her into I had a television show, a short one, and took her into the studio. And she just amazed me. Here, I'd been going to the station, for weeks and weeks and weeks, And she walked and she says, oh, she said, oh, look what's here. I've never seen anything like it. I said, what's the matter? She says, these cameras are robots. There were no cameramen behind them. I hadn't noticed it. So then she marched herself up into the director's booth to see how they were working these cameras.
She was curious.
But she noticed it right away, mm-hmm. and I had to pull her away because we were doing a live show. But on the way, she said, Linda, could you stop over here at this Walgreens? I need to buy a notebook. I said, well, what do you need it for? She said, well, I'm taking notes. I said, what are you taking notes? She said, well, I'm always learning something, and I always mm-hmm. want to have a notebook here ready to learn. So that was a real treat to know her.
That's wonderful.
And to see what she was really like as a person.
Did you see the movie? Was it accurate?
Yes. Well, you know, Meryl Streep did a wonderful job. But, you know, one time we did play our tapes of Julia because we wanted people to hear her real voice. And that was wonderful. But it was accurate. She wanted to be in the Secret Service. I guess it was called the OSS at mm-hmm. that time. And she was too big. She's 6 foot two. And they said, you're a woman.
She'd stand out as a spy?
Yeah, she would stand out, of course. But she went overseas and worked in the office. And that's where she met the love of her life, who was Paul, her husband, Paul Child. And so that was very accurate in the movie. That was a very close relationship.
So what about you, Linda? Did you always love to cook as a little girl? And
well, if truth be told, I always liked to eat.
Oh, is that why you learned how to cook?
Well, when I got married, I said to my mother, my husband really likes good food, and I really know how to cook. And she said, I'm not worried about you because you like to eat. And so I learned. I guess I overachieved a little bit.
You must have become a quick study.
Right. Well,
did you start, like, with the joy of cooking?
Or? Well, no. Actually, we lived in Europe, London and Paris for so long, and I started taking cooking lessons there. And I actually talk about I went from dessert to the main course. So first I learned dessert.
Oh, no wonder that you have a special affinity.
Right. And Mr. Vogenberger was the pastry chef at Fortnum & Mason. And he taught me. He had originally been the chef at the Soccer Hotel in Vienna. And he showed me how to make the original soccer tort.
Oh, wow. That is a fabulous thing.
That is a fabulous thing.
Do you still
thing.
Make it?
For
on occasion?
On occasion.
Okay, special occasions.
It takes a while.
You know, I was reading, I watched that movie about Julia, and it inspired me to, I took my Julia's cookbook. What's the name of that cookbook, Linda?
Mastering the Art of French Cooking?
Yeah, I had a copy, so I just opened it up to an arbitrary page and said, I'm going to cook whatever I open it to. And it turned out that the recipe took 18 hours to cook and maybe 3 days to gather the ingredients. So I went back to the joy of cooking.
I hope there was wine in that recipe, Fred.
Well, there would have been wine in the cook. I know that.
Right. And so then I moved to Paris and I took lessons there and I ran a fruit and vegetable cooperative. And then I became a cordon bleu chef. I took a diploma and opened a cooking school. So I just kept going on and on with all this wanting to eat such
and back
good
in
food.
Miami, you worked in the high-end grocery.
Right,
area,
I was there.
Like
yes,
Gardner's Market.
Right, I was director there for a while, and then I came here with all of you.
And how has this show changed your career or enhanced your career?
Well, it's enhanced it because you get to meet and talk to people that you would never, ever meet. And I'd like to talk to people outside the normal venue, that some people who weren't actually chefs. I was thinking of Isaac Stern, who would have thought, you know. Mm. But anytime you would go out to dinner, I've been at several dinners. I've been sitting next to somebody I didn't really know them, and I'd say, "Where'd you eat last night?" Boom, that's it. That's all you have to know.
Right.
And I remember Arthur Schlesinger told me. Then he never stopped talking about food. Well, it's been really, really wonderful talking with all of you.
Boy, this hour has flown by.
It sure has.
We had music. We had spaghetti and meatballs. Good company.
Well, and
good
I want
stories.
To thank. I want to thank you, Bonnie, and you, Fred, and you, Joe, for working together. It's been really a lot of fun. And I want to thank our listeners. I love their emails and their wonderful support. So I'm Linda Gassenheimer. Please join me next week for more food news and views.
And thanks for tuning in. Thanks to those who've shown support of the station by making a pledge. And there's still time for you. 866-247-9576 or online at WLRNradio.org. Tomorrow at 1 o'clock, it's Ed Bell and the South Florida Arts Beat. Monday, we return with a program devoted to wage theft with employment attorney Donna Ballman and FIU researcher Cynthia Hernandez. To the calendar. On this day in 1888, 125 years ago, the birth of poet, playwright, and critic T.S. Eliot in St. Louis. Perhaps the 20th century's most important English language poet, he renounced his U.S. citizenship in 1927. He won a Nobel Prize in Literature in 1948. And also on this day in 1969, 44 years ago, the premiere of the TV series The Brady Bunch on ABC. Its producer, Sherwood Schwartz, had created Gilligan's Island in 1964 and placed next to T.S. Eliot. And one more while we ponder over $50 million in career prize money on this day in 1981, 32 years ago, the birth of Serena Williams in Saginaw, Michigan. She's won more major tennis titles in singles, doubles, and mixed doubles than any other active player, male or female. So we leave with a thought from T.S. Eliot, who went to Harvard and Oxford. Quote, "The bad poet is usually unconscious, where he ought to be conscious, and conscious where he ought to be unconscious." For Bonnie Berman, this is Joseph Cooper. Next up, it's Here and Now from NPR News.